Salutation, Nuts fans. And I know I said we'd be back in 2016, but here it is, your not-so-secret Amazing Avenue Audio Festivus Festival. Yes, in lieu of a holiday special, I guess you can call this a holiday special, we're going to celebrate Festivus, which seems appropriate given that Jerry Seinfeld is a huge Mets fan, and also have a fun way to wrap up the year, at least to the part where Lucas starts complaining about Alejandro de Haza later in the show. But before we get to that, I want to introduce our co-hosts for the Amazing Avenue Audio Festivus Spectacular. Joining me are Steve Sippo, Lucas Vlahos, and Brian Salvatore. Gentlemen, we start the proceedings, as is prescripted by the Festivus Wikipedia page that I looked up for researching this podcast. We unveil the Festivus poll, so chosen because of its good strength to weight ratio. So, which Met, current Met, do you think has the best strength to weight ratio? Anyone can jump in.
Certainly not Bartolo Colon.
No. I once shook David Wright's hand and was flabbergasted at the size of his arm. So I'm going to say David Wright.
That's not bad. I mean, he's not a big dude by baseball player standards, and he's hit 30 home runs before. At his peak, he was a plus power guy, so I could see that, yeah.
I was going to go with Conforto because he's not, like, he's chunky, but he's not huge.
Okay.
Yeah, I was also thinking Conforto. I mean, he looks unassuming. He looks like nothing particularly special in terms of body strength, but some of his home runs last season were impressive.
I'm going with Delson Herrera.
Dude's
got guns.
Damn it.
I forget who Instagrammed out that picture. I think it might have actually been. I knew it was a Diamondback. I think it might have actually been Ender Inciarte. A photo of him, Juan Lagares, and Delson Herrera working out at the Barwis camp. And Herrera's got some guns. You want to talk about a dude that has power and not is very short. I think he's listed at 5'9". He's not 5'9". So I'm going to go with Delson Herrera, the best strength to weight ratio on the Mets. We don't decorate the Festivus poll, of course, because Frank Costanza does not like tinsel. So which Met do you think is the least fond of tinsel and other holiday decorations?
Lucas Duda.
That was my answer, too.
One of my original ideas for like a year-end spectacular was just going to cut together all the opening questions from this year and people answering Lucas Duda to them. Sort of the basis for not allowing anyone to answer Lucas Duda anymore.
But he's totally like the surly, just leave me alone. I don't give a shit about anything.
I picture him walking into the clubhouse and there's a Christmas tree and he just goes, come on.
He's like the dude that like the family getting together around the Christmas tree to like decorate. He's just on there like on his Game Boy. I guess he
exactly.
Could have been like, see, he's 20. He's in his late 20s. So he's probably a, this would have been
Game
like
Boy
the
Color.
Early Game Boy Color. Probably Game Boy Color. Yeah. Pre Game Boy Advance, but Game Boy Color. Just wants nothing to do with it whatsoever. I don't know. I think it's like the most like self-serious Met is for that kind of stuff.
Maybe Harvey?
I don't know. I could see Harvey like having a couple glasses of eggnog and really like getting a little overly into the Christmas spirit.
He totally owns several ironic Christmas sweaters.
Yes, definitely.
Mm. I could see Daniel Murphy making a big stink about the commercialization of Christmas, but he's no longer a Met, so that doesn't apply.
It's kind of hard because I feel like most of the current Mets are all kind of generally happily portray a happy worldview most of the time, so it's hard to perceive one of them as being surly and grumpy outside of Duda, who definitely is.
I don't know if he actually is, but we'll go with Lucas Duda because, you know, whatever. It's Festivus.
Why not?
So it's time for dinner, gentlemen. The Festivus dinner. So produce your hip flasks if necessary. I've already drank an entire Manhattan when we were trying to get Steve's internet to work. It was a big Manhattan, too, larger than I usually make, because I wanted to make it through the entire podcast. We are less than 5 minutes in. But in the spirit of coming together for a holiday dinner, if you could host a dinner party and invite any, like a dinner for four kind of scenario, so any three Mets, past or present, associated with the franchise, and in any way that you want to judge, who would you invite to your dinner party? We'll start. I'll actually try to organize this one a little better. We'll start with Brian.
Okay, so at a dinner party, you know, oftentimes you're the host, you're cooking, you're getting things going. You need somebody who's going to talk a lot, who's going to be the social butterfly of the dinner party. So I invited Curtis Granderson because he seems like a nice enough guy to talk to anybody at dinner. You know, he would be a good surrogate host while I'm cooking.
He'll compliment your food no matter how bad it is.
Exactly. And on that same thought process, I'm inviting Bartolo Colon because he'll eat my food no matter how bad it is. So I don't have to be a gourmand for this to work. I can just put out whatever and Bartolo will be happy with it. And then I think for my last spot, just because he seems like a really chill, nice guy, I'd invite Jerry Blevins. He probably makes any dinner party a little bit better.
He's some of the guy that would come with good anecdotes.
Yeah, and and I feel like Granderson definitely brings a nice bottle of wine with him or something. And I think Blevins comes with, you know, a nice side dish or appetizer. Seems like a thoughtful guy. So yeah, that would be my dinner party.
Lucas.
I also had the same idea with Cologne, where no matter what I cook, he'll eat it. So even if people don't like stuff, they just kind of shove it his way and it'll go away. I want to bring David Wright because he generally seems like one of the nicest athletes in any sport anywhere. So I'd probably make good conversation with him all night. And then for my third one, since Cologne and Wright are probably some of the more subdued Mets, I thought it'd be cool to bring Fabilio along just because he's the more energetic, going to run around and make everything a fun time and make everyone else laugh during the dinner party.
Steve Sippa.
I mean, you're going to get more of the same here. I went with Granderson because he's going to have some good dinner conversation and banter, and it's always appreciated at a dinner party. Brought Bartolo because you're going to want something to eat all those leftovers.
We definitely should have discussed this in the Slack prior to prior to recording.
And my third guy is going to bring is Harvey, because if I fuck up dinner and burn everything, Harvey's going to know all the hot places to go. And he will definitely have no weights, and he'll probably have a bunch of babes too. So
nice.
Harvey seems like kind of bring a date, even though you've only made enough food for four people. Like, I didn't give you a plus one, man.
Which supermodel is he dating at this point? I wonder.
I don't know. The funny thing is, you saw the Players Tribune piece or whatever, like his little like question and answer thing from earlier this week.
Oh yeah, the Belieber comment or whatever.
Right. Well, the one that jumped out at me is he's like, what app is like over for you now? And he picked like Tinder and then said like shh, like wrote in shh after it. I'm like, how has somebody not like screen capped Harvey's Tinder profile and posted it on the internet at some point yet? Or like perhaps somebody posting like Harvey's like Tinder pickup lines, which I'm sure are essentially, you want Matt Harvey. I don't know. There's a certain kind of like Connecticut jockey bro that I'm fairly familiar with. And I could see him totally being that dude on Tinder and just being horribly awkward. And then just ending it with, you on Matt Harvey.
Oh, go ahead, Steve.
When you are on Harvey, that's all you need to say.
It's true. I don't know, like, why are you on Tinder, dude? Go ahead, yeah.
Am I the only one that finds him awkward? Like, every
time?
Well,
there's sports media awkward. Like, I think if I had to, like, stand in front of a gaggle of reporters and that was, like, my main way of interacting or the way people sort of judged my
ability to interact socially, I think that would probably, you know. And then you just stick me in a towel or whatever and flip-flops while doing it.
I mean, to be fair, he's just there to talk about Qualcomm, and you guys can make it awkward, so.
True.
Taking it way back with, like, the 2013 memes.
You know me.
Maymays,
oh, yes. Harper. Maymays. Which is the 2015 meme. At least slightly more topical. I don't know. I could see Harvey being, like, a chillax bro in, like, a one-on-one situation or a smaller group setting. I think he just doesn't want to be bothered with the media.
He seems like the guy that at a dinner party is always on his phone.
Yeah, that's right.
Just always checking his phone. Yeah, exactly. Just swiping left all night.
Sort of more generally with like baseball dudes. I'm sure it's probably actually like useful if you're the kind of guy that wants a girl in every port kind of scenario. I'm sure Tinder is useful for that.
I'm surprised he needs it.
It's more convenience. Yeah, it's like if you don't want to have to like just go out to a bar after a game, it sort of cuts out the whole process. It just streamlines everything for you. So I considered Keith. I'm a little surprised no one picked Keith.
He was my, if we could choose four, he was my fourth.
See, I think the problem with Keith, though, is he's like, he'd be a little too like snarky about your cooking and your wine choices. Because he fancies himself a bit of a gourmand. So I ended up going,
oh, you chose a Merlot. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's like, jeez. We just get like the exasperated sigh after like the dessert course comes out. Just like,
are we
talking? I got a long drive back to Sag Harbor. Going.
Are we talking like normal Keith sigh or 19 inning game in St. Louis?
I think just like normal Keith sigh. Yeah.
The best kind of Keith sigh is the spring training Keith sigh, because you know that there's been so little to build up to it, and he's still so frustrated.
That could be entertaining in and of itself, mind you. But I went with R.A. Dickey. I think he'd be an interesting dinner guest.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good call.
Tsuyoshi Shinjo, just because, you know.
Come on.
I said what?
I thought we had to do current Mets.
No, I said past or present.
That was also a totally predictable pick.
Yeah, sure. And Howie Rose. Because I think it knocks out Howie. You got to do the sushi platter, which covers, I think, Howie and Shinjo. So from what is it? What is his sushi place that he always talks about on the radio broadcast? Just get a big sushi spread for like for the first course. Good to go. And Shinjo's just like a remarkably interesting dude.
Yeah.
Although I don't know how much English he actually speaks, I don't think it would matter. He'd just show up in some ridiculous, like, outfit with, like, models that are living in his house at Bali where he has a dirt bike track or whatever he's doing now.
Yeah. He definitely brings +2 without being invited with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a chick on both arms.
I wonder what color his hair is at this point.
I don't know. He needs to be more in the baseball consciousness nationally than I think he is. He needs to get back in the game somehow. Without him, like, sort of in my cultural milieu, I feel very empty in some ways. So in the spirit, we'll stick with a food theme. We're not quite done with dinner yet. Since the Mets aren't going to add any actual good players for next year, it seems like. We'll get to the airing of grievances in a minute. What foods would you like to see added to Citi Field next season?
More Shake Shack. Just make everything a Shake Shack. Yes, everything.
I got to be honest, I'm a little burnt out on Shake Shack.
Impossible.
I know, but it's just I'm a little burnt out on Shake Shack.
See, I went to college in Pittsburgh, so I got used to going to PNC Park. And they have great wings at PNC Park. And I don't think there's many good wings at Citi Field. So.
There's not many good wings in New York.
Yeah.
They could get the dude from, it's probably not practical price-wise, but the dude from Moo Ramen in Long Island City, just like the foie gras stuffed wings.
That sounds incredibly delicious.
Yeah. I'd settle for some, you know, just some regular chicken wings, but sometimes like some good wings. Yeah,
dinosaur barbecue or something in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are wings a good baseball food, though? I get, like, really messy eating wings.
When I was living in Pittsburgh, there was a Quaker Steak and Lube, like, shack at PNC Park, and they would sell you a big bucket of wings, and friends and I would always, like, split a bucket of wings. It seemed pretty good. If you're keeping score, it's a
pain. Yeah, I was going to say, if you're keeping score, you're just getting, like, barbecue sauce all over you. I could just see, like, Chris McShane making a mess of his scorebook, getting really upset with himself, still eating the wings.
If they're good enough wings, you don't care.
It's true. Any other suggestions?
The AT&T garlic fries are heavenly. So if we can import those somehow, that'd be pretty great.
Box Treats have like a garlic thing? I feel like I've had them at some point and they were okay.
I have not tried them.
I think I mean like a better... like, gourmet ice cream is, like, the thing in New York City. I mean, not really a thing anymore, but it was a thing at one point. Maybe get some better ice cream choices. I think it's, like, the 7th, 8th inning maybe you've had. The problem is you had a couple beers. You don't want to throw, like, an ice cream cone down on top of it, but...
Yeah.
Maybe some sorbet?
Sorbet? Gelato? A little gelato?
Yeah, there we go.
Gelato is always a good choice.
Think what the hot food trends in the city are right now. They could capitalize on.
I suppose there isn't like a Thai sandwich.
You think a banh mi. You do banh mi. Yeah. It's Vietnamese, but like a big old torta or something like that from the margarita place. Just start doing, or like a cernita or something like that. I like the addition of Two Boots. I like the pressed was a good choice.
I actually discovered this, apparently, well, my dad discovered it in some food and wine magazine, but there's like a meatball sub place very, like, off to the side of Blue Smoke and Shake Shack, and I don't remember
the name. It's Pat LaFrieda again, I think.
Yeah.
It's Pat LaFrieda's
steak sandwich is a delight.
It is. It's awesome. Again, it's pricey. It's not entirely that easy to eat at a baseball game. I wish like the hot dog selections were a little better. I'm just not a big Nathan's guy.
That's a good call.
And what would you prefer? I don't know. I think what's like Nathan's is so iconic. It's kind of hard to in New York go in a different direction.
But it's also just a hot dog.
Yeah.
There's a spot by my house that has hot dog sliders that has like gourmet toppings on the hot dogs. That would be a nice.
I could go for just nice like option. some good conies too would be nice. Some really high quality chili or something like that.
Yeah.
I guess it's messy, but at least it's like a, you know, like a hot dog and a, like, and the Chicago dog from Shake Shack is excellent, or the Chicago dog, whatever. I know I made fun of Chicago dogs on the podcast recently, but I'm actually a pretty big fan. But if you're standing in the Shake Shack line, you're not getting a fucking Chicago dog.
No.
Right.
Which is the problem there. They need like a separate line just for like Chicago dogs and like shakes or something. I'm not standing in line for the burger.
The bigger question is...
How about a nice alcoholic shake?
That would be actually a good idea.
Yeah.
Adding an alcohol... I mean, obviously you're talking to me, so... we have gourmet burger place near where we used to live that did like a bourbon and vanilla and caramel shake. That was excellent.
That sounds really good.
It's incredible. I've had something similar.
And based on the 2016 Mets current projections, I'm going to need all the help I can get going to games there. So, boozy shakes.
Just drop some Baileys in the Shake Shack shake and it'll be fine.
Yeah, it could work. Take the, what is it, the Fair Trade coffee shake. Just drop a shot of Baileys or Amaretto in that. Or both.
Yeah. Both.
You might need both. Which brings us conveniently to the airing of grievances, which is probably indistinguishable from every other podcast we've had this year.
Just rename the podcast.
The airing of grievances, yeah. This may be the longest segment of the season. I don't know. Lucas, I'm going to let you start since you've been online since 7 o'clock agitating to get in here. So go ahead. We'll just keep going around. Now, this can apply to stuff the Mets have done or are doing. Mets fans, Mets Twitter, New York City media, other podcast hosts. Whatever floats your boat. We'll just keep going around until we run out of things to grieve about. So, Lucas, go ahead.
I'm not going to rag too much onto Ozzie because there's not much to say there. Like, I think you tweeted it and said it very eloquently. Like, he's a nice bench piece on a contending team. He's not a primary center fielder on a contending team. And he's probably going to be
not a center fielder, full stop.
Yeah. Right. And whatever value he gives you with his slightly above average output against righties, he probably negates with his defense. But that's just part of the larger problem where the Mets could have put themselves in a position to be the best team in baseball this offseason and did have embarrassed themselves for lack of a better. Like, the moves they made were nice. They were good complimentary moves. Walker, Cabrera, Daza even is a fine complimentary
move. Bartolo Colon.
Excuse me, how could I forget Bartolo Colon? And even Blevins, like, solid moves. This team has a billion-dollar rotation that's being paid $10 million a year. You buy a superstar or two to put around that. Like, they could have been better than the Cubs, and now steer projections are bad. There's error bars on it, but when the gap is 14 wins, it probably means something, and that gap could have been zero or even favored the Mets. It's all the Wilpons' fault, basically.
Who's up next with the airing of grievances?
I can piggyback on that. I feel like it's one thing for the Wilpons to lie in casual, in vague terminology. But they specifically said, if fans come out, we will spend more money.
They are, as of right now, spending more money.
Oh, come on.
Well, you said vague. It's literally true. It's technically correct, which is all we all know, the best kind of correct.
But, you know, fans came out to Citi Field like they never had in the history of the ballpark before, and they're spending marginally more. And that's a bummer.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just being a dick.
I know.
As I'm sure everyone with any familiarity with the podcast also knows. Steve Sippa.
I don't know. I mean, everything just gets traced back to the Wilpons being shitty owners.
That seems fair. So I can deal I can deal with cheapness. Like, I kind of saw this coming after, like, the day after Game 5. They're like, yeah, we're not really in on Cespedes so much. We think we're going to spend more money. And kind of sending out clear signals to the media they weren't going to spend that much more money. So I was mentally prepared for that. I've sat through bad Mets teams in my lifetime. I've podcasted through bad Mets teams in my lifetime. I've watched plenty of shitty Mets games. What I cannot abide is Keith Hernandez is still not under contract for next season in the broadcast booth. You can skimp anywhere else you want. I need GKR to get through any Met season, good, bad, or indifferent.
See, they spent more money on guys like Daza and can't afford Keith's fur coat bonus anymore, so.
The mink-lined gloves for those April night games. We have any more grievances?
I have a petty one. Oh, sure, go ahead.
This is the pettier the better.
Lucas, go for it.
Can I rag on Tyler Clippard again?
Sure, go for it.
I see people saying, hey, it's not a bad idea to bring back Tyler Clippard. He had the 25th worst FIP, the second worst Sierra, and the worst XFIP in baseball. His K-minus baseball percentage was the 105th worst, or 105th in the top. And you quibble with the predictive ERA metrics all you want, and he has exceeded his FIP by almost a run over his career, and his XFIP by 1.2 runs. But his XFIP is 5.3, and his FIP is 4.3, and they want to sign him as our big bullpen addition. Please, for the love of God, no. I'm done.
All right, so mine is super petty. So I have a young child, and this year we joined the Mets Kids Club. And part of that got us 10 free tickets to Mets games. 10 vouchers for $30, which is pretty sweet. This year, same price, only 4 free vouchers. Boo. Still pretty good.
One of my, I think one of my 2015 favorite tweets was Ryan Kelly. There was a whole, Mets Kids Club kerfluffle in the spring, I think, along similar lines.
Yeah, vaguely.
The dude that, like, wrote to every single team or whatever, and a bunch of them, the Mets were the only ones that didn't send him stuff, and I'll actually find it, because why not? I have TweetDeck open, as I usually do while I'm podcasting, so I should be able to find this.
But, I mean, it was great just from a totally selfish standpoint. I went to 3 games essentially for free, turned my daughter into a hardcore Mets fan, and, you know, it was nice. Now I'll only have to go to 1 game, and that's a goddamn travesty.
Hang on, I'm scrolling. I favorited a lot of things this year. There it is. This is from @RyanKelly. Can't believe the Mets refused to send a 2-year-old some stickers. Jeff Wilpon is usually so good dealing with new parents.
Only if they're single mothers, though.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's not so good.
Yes, you don't have to explain the joke, Lucas. Everyone got it.
Sorry.
I'm a little cranky that I'm not going to be able to follow the Mets as closely next year as I probably was this year. It's very disappointing to me. I have to do, like, national prospect things now, so I can't have, like, really strong opinions on Victor Cruzado like I do this year.
The struggle
it's
is
always time to have strong opinions on Victor Cruzado.
I will still have strong opinions on Dom Smith. Don't worry about that. I don't think any of the podcast listeners really were.
Doubt you'll miss a single Bartolo Colon start and possibly relief appearance later in the year.
It is appointment television.
Not as much as is at bats, though.
Yeah, so that actually leads me into one more grievance, I think. Like, I get that. So there's maybe among more sabermetrically inclined fans, or. And I touched on this a little bit when we sort of talked about him signing with the team or re signing with the team. That, like, yeah, okay, he's not a great starting pitcher anymore, in all likelihood. I mean, maybe you think he's just been unlucky the last 2 seasons, and his FIP more accurately represents, is more predictive going forward than his ERA or raw run average. I should be a company man to look up his Sierra, but I'm not going to do that. But the aesthetics of watching him pitch is better than Logan Verrett. And I like Logan Verrett, apparently. I've been called one of his biggest boosters. Not so much on Sean Gilmartin. And maybe Rafael Montero's shoulder is better. He pitched 1 inning for the for Escogido this week. Struck out 2 and gave up a homer. I don't care about that so much as where his fastball velocity is sitting. I'll probably see if I can find a Lise or Toro Celeste game where he's pitching and check that out. Even after I just said I'm going to follow the Mets system probably less closely in 2016 than I did this year. But it's just, I get it. I get that it's become a bit of a zero-sum game. Like, you want to get the best players possible. But there is something to be said for just the Bartolo Colon experience in general. They've got 4 other really good starting pitchers. And I can sit here and make, like, a strong case that there's added benefits. You get 180 guaranteed innings from Cologne, probably.
That was what I was about to say.
And this is a rotation specifically that you want to pay for innings over upside.
Yeah.
I mean, with center field, you want to maybe pay a little extra for Spahn because he's a better player if he's healthy, though there's some risk there, than Deaza. That's maybe where you want to pay for upside. But in the rotation, you've got 4 really good pitchers, but some of them are going to be on innings counts. Yeah, and some of them are going to be on innings counts. Like, you just need a guy to take the ball every 5th day and give you 6 innings so you don't burn out your bullpen.
Yeah.
And if you need to skip a start down the stretch, he can pop in. Yeah. You can expand to 6. You can do different things with him that you're not comfortable doing with a less experienced pitcher, with an arm you have an eye towards the future with. You can just ride Bartolo Colon. So stop fucking, it's Bartolo, there's nothing bad about this.
He's better than John Neese.
he's very possibly better than John Neese, Ray Serager now. Are we going to close the book on 2015 grievances? Do we have any more? I know it's hard to complain too much. The team went to the fucking World Series this year, so it's hard to complain too much.
They're still a good team. They're going to be a good team in 2016. It's going to be fun.
They are rolling out an up-the-middle defense of Ezreal Cabrera, Neil Walker, and Alejandro Deaza.
They're also rolling out a starting rotation that, and this is going to sound way too high, but it's going to has the potential.
It's a billion-dollar rotation, I've been told.
It has the best potential to be one of the best rotations ever. So I'm trying to be optimistic up for my bitching earlier.
It's okay. It's time to move on to the feats of strength. So your favorite Met feat of strength from the last year.
Well, for me, I think it was the Cespedes' 3 home run game against Colorado. I mean, hitting one home run, hitting 2 home runs, great. But I mean, 3 home runs, that's
always
very special.
Weren't they all like this, like bombs to dead center too? Or at least the first two were. Just like bombs to dead center. Yeah, it's funny. It's, if you're going to play Deaza in center field, it's almost like Yoenis Cespedes might be a better center fielder than him. Just something to ruminate on, maybe, this holiday season.
Similarly, I was going to go with Kirk's 3 home run game. Because I feel like Kirk's a guy you don't expect that much from. So when he pulls out a feat of strength, it is especially noticeable.
Along that same vein, for you don't expect it and it's going to be noticeable, I had to go with Bartolo Colon's double pass Ichiro in center field. Where he literally walked to second base and could have probably...
He easily could have had a triple. He could have had a triple.
Just like, nah, I'm fine. I'm going to stop here. That's enough for me. He hit the ball hard, too.
He did. He took the first pitch, like the bat on his shoulder. Just to lull the pitcher into a false sense of security. And like, all right, I'm swinging now. I will say that if Colon ever hits a home run at Citi Field...
Oh, my God.
Like, the place will literally come unglued. And I'm using literally there.
People will just shake like Shea used to.
Yeah, people will just like mob the field. It was like a pitch invasion. They'll have to like, Mets will have to forfeit the game. People will just be like rending their clothes off in the stands. The utter chaos, like Book of Revelation shit in the stadium when that happens. I'm saying when, not if. My favorite feat of strength from the past year is Jeyuris Familia 96 mile an hour splitter.
Oh, yes.
That's a good one.
And how he does it, no clue. Don't know if his elbow is going to hold up to doing it more times, but it's very fucking impressive. So we'll close 2015 with a wish for a Festivus miracle. So this can be the most miraculous event from last season, or it could be a miracle you want to see in the future. What do we have?
Mine was one from last season, but I hope the same for 2016. And that's the starting pitching health that the Mets saw in 2015.
That is going to be very important. I mean, if they get 115 starts from their top four, that would be very helpful.
At least 115 wins.
Lucas, what's your Festivus miracle?
I'm going to have to go with that game where they came back from 6 runs down against the Nationals. Especially since I've got a very bad habit of bitching as the Mets blow things because I got used to them doing it. And I have the AOL Instant Messenger logs of me bitching for that whole game and then suddenly coming around as Cespedes blasted that double into the corner and then losing my mind as Kirk put that the go-ahead home run in the seats.
Wait a second, are you a time traveler? Using Instant Messenger?
Yes.
Yeah, why aren't we just discussing this the other day?
Yeah, I think we were.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm the only 20-year-old I know that uses AIM. But that's not the point. That game was quite possibly my favorite Met game I've ever watched.
Steve Sippa?
Well, the fact that the Mets made the World Series last year is a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, it really kind of is.
Excellent point.
I am going with if we do this again next year, which we probably will, because I'm not one for original ideas, I'm pretty sure the 2016 Festivus miracle is going to be Bartolo Colon winning the Silver Slugger and getting that $50,000 as outlined in his contract.
The most glorious miracle of all.
That's just like a boilerplate thing. It's like obviously very amusing, but I see this Bartolo being like, no, put it in there. I'm going to get it. Just deciding, like, I'm going to really work on my hitting this offseason. I'm going to go to Estadio Bartolo Colon and just set up the pitching machine. He's just sitting there. He flies out Kevin Long to the Dominican.
Retool my swing.
Yeah. Tweak some things.
If Ruben Quintana can hit a home run, then Bartolo Colon can hit a home run.
That seems reasonable.
I mean, we got that mass component of kinetic energy and momentum. So, I mean, he's got that going for him.
Are we moving the walls in again this year?
Only when Cologne's that bad.
I feel like somebody suggested at some point just like walls on some sort of track that just moves them when the Mets bat and moves them back out when the other team's up.
They can rename the Pepsi porch the Cologne Corner.
Yes. Some sort of like mutant league baseball shit. We do have some emails, so let's fucking clear out the inbox for 2015.
Oh, God, emails.
We do have emails. The fun part of the podcast is over. Before we do emails, we do housekeeping. It's the Mason Avenue Audio's Festivus Festival. I haven't really given it a number. I don't think I'm going to give it a number.
It's a secret podcast.
It's a secret podcast. I'll probably just post it on the site. I never follow through with anything I say, so. Mason Avenue Audio is the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Mason Avenue. Find us on the internet at amazonavenue.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Mason Avenue. Or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/AmazonAvenue, where you find great Facebook comments like, the guys that host this podcast are boring. Which is a fair and insightful commentary, to be sure. Especially by Facebook comment standards. You find the podcast on iTunes, just search for Mason Avenue Audio, and you can listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. You can find the podcast on the Stitcher app, download directly from blogtalkradio.com/AmazonAvenue, or listen to the embedded player that goes up in the podcast post at Amazon Avenue proper. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. My co-hosts this week are Brian Salvatore, who you can follow on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap, Lucas Vlahos, I don't remember what you are. El Vlahos 343, is that right?
Yep.
All right. And Steve Sippa, who is conveniently, for my purposes, after drinking a gigantic Manhattan, at Steve Sippa. That was the housekeeping. These are your emails. You can email the podcast at podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. Our first email is from Johnny Caps. Hey, Jeffrey and Greg. Greg bowed out at the last second.
Boo.
For shame. A happy offseason to you. Some thoughts on Yo. Add Cespedes to this team, and our ceiling is so much higher. He's the hitter pitcher's fear, and I genuinely feel he makes all around him in the lineup better. If he can play a cromulent center field for the next 2 years before moving to a corner, there is no weak spot in our very long lineup. I think, as previously stated, he might right now be a better center fielder than Alejandro Diaz, who lost his job playing for a second division White Sox team in center field. I feel like there is something we are not hearing about the Mets, and maybe other teams as well, feelings about Cespedes. I think it is more than just the money. Any of the personality things I have heard seem rather vague. I'm not sure why more specifics haven't come out. Anything you've heard you can talk about? I just hope his enhanced performance isn't due to being infertile like Manny was. Sent via my continuum transfunctioner.
What?
It actually says that twice. I don't usually read those when they happen, but I'm going to do a little shout-out to the podcasts, and they always do that. That's an odd choice, too. It just sort of ends that way. Twice. I mean, the Boston media killed him on the way out the door, but that applies to every single player that has played in Boston in the last decade. So, outside of that, like, you know, Detroit's talking about a reunion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything bad there. He just doesn't like talking to the media, which again is not a moral failing. It's not something you have to enjoy to be a good, useful baseball player and good in the clubhouse. You never hear anything like objectively bad about him. Now, is he going to be as good for the Mets over the next 2 years as he was from August 1st on last year? Probably not. But this lineup looks a lot different. If it's Cespedes in center, Conforto in left, Granderson in right, Lagares as your fourth outfielder slash, you know, guy that plays against lefties, caddies for Cespedes slash Conforto in the late innings, and then Diaza is your fifth outfielder who can, you know, if somebody gets hurt, he can start in a corner in a pinch and be okay. That's a good use of him. It's somewhere between $5.5 and $7 million to do that, but if you're a good baseball team, that's not unreasonable to pay for bench depth. He was always a guy I think that was going to have to wait for sort of the market to settle. Like, who misses on Hayward? You know, who likes him more or less than Upton? He's a very good fit for the White Sox, I think, since they seem to be tilting towards maybe being competitive in a shitty AL Central. And it's a big upgrade over, like, Afacil Garcia, whoever they're going to play in a corner.
I don't think they even have two corner outfielders right now.
Right. So he makes sense there. I mean, the other teams could theoretically be interested. I think he's going to get less now than I thought maybe November 1st, but not significantly less. And so the stuff I see on Twitter is like, okay, we can sign for the amount of money they spent. And we're not even talking about new money because the Kadir retirement and the Nice for Walker swap kind of queers that a little bit. They've spent roughly, let's see, $10 million in ARB for Walker, $4 million for Blevins. Let's just go with the base salary for Daza for accounting purposes. That gets us a 20. Another 8.5 or 8.25, I think it is, or whatever, for Cabrera. I guess it's 28. So $35 million in new money. Not in new money, but $35 million in contracts so far in the 2015 offseason. So the idea is, let's even say Nice for Walker is a wash. Let's call it $25 million in new money. They can spend that money on Cespedes for 2015 and not add any new payroll for 2015 over what they've already spent. If you want to sort of, you know, play a little shell game with the numbers. The problem isn't this year, because this year all that money's gone outside of Cabrera. It comes down to getting approval to actually offer long-term money to any player. And this ties back into what was sort of going on behind the scenes with the Zobrist stuff, where it wasn't clear what they actually were going to offer him. Because I don't think the Mets knew what they were going to offer him. Because they were in a situation where whatever they probably could match for 60 for Zobrist, but they'd have to get it approved. And I'm not talking about approved by the Wilpons. So that's where the problem... You want to offer... You know, let's say Cespedes signs... I thought he was going to sign for around 6150, maybe a little more. Let's say it's 5110. The problem isn't the $22 million this year. It's the $22 million their creditors want in 2019.
Yeah.
But that said, Cespedes is batting third and playing center field instead of Diaza batting eighth and playing center field. That's a very different lineup. And look, it might go bad at the end of it. Every long-term contract does, for the most part. The ones that don't are the exceptions to the rule. And the guys that sign when they're a lot younger than Cespedes. You know, it's like Carlos Beltran.
Jason Hayward.
Potentially Jason Hayward. Cespedes' skill set may not age particularly well. But I just don't give a shit about 2018 right now.
Nor should a team that was just in the World Series.
Thank you. As far as like performance enhancing, the only thing that enhances his performance is big old roasted pig on a spit.
Also the cavalcade of shitty teams the Mets played, but
that didn't hurt either. Now they're gonna play a lot of them next year too, though, Lucas.
No, not
possibly even more.
It might actually be more.
I think the Braves are even worse this time around.
It's very possible. Our next email is from Carrie. Hey y'all. He's from New Orleans. It's okay. He's in Brooklyn, but if I recall correctly, he's from New Orleans. I occasionally remember where our emailers are actually from. I may conflate Scotland and England, Ireland, all of the British Isles at some points in various points in time. I was just playing with the 2016 Steamer projections on Fangraphs, and I noticed that Jair Somilia and Zach Wheeler are both projected to pitch 65 innings next season. So between the two, who do you think pitches more innings in 2016? Best carry in Brooklyn.
It's a good question.
I'll say this. This is a good question. I have a strange feeling, health permitting, Familia's going to throw a lot more than 65 innings next year given the current state of the Mets bullpen.
Yep.
I know, and Terry Collins.
Yeah, you got to regress these things naturally. But over the last two seasons, or each of the last two seasons, he has thrown significantly more than 65 innings. 77 and 78, to be specific. While throwing 96-mile-an-hour splitters. At least at the end of last year. So I guess this is like as good a time as any to discuss this in abstract terms. What is your plan for Zach Wheeler next year?
Are we presuming the normal time frame?
Yeah, we'll presume a fairly normal Tommy John recovery.
So he comes back, what, All-Star break?
Thereabouts, yes. So that would put him about between 15 and 16 months out from Tommy John surgery, which is not quite the full 18, 19 that Harvey was, but I think not the like year out that Parnell was that turned into a disaster.
Doesn't this depend considerably on where the Mets are in the standings at that point?
Sure. Well, I mean, yes and no. I would say if they're winning, if they're bad, you'll just ramp him up normally. So he'll take the ball every fifth day at that point. Maybe he'll keep his innings down, but if there's nothing, you want him to get normal sort of arm strength building things. Mm. I think if they're good and he's healthy, he's probably an upgrade over Bartolo Colon. So you still want him taking the ball every fifth day. Now down the stretch, maybe going into the playoffs, maybe he's not your game 3 or 4 starter, and you want to use him as a high-leverage reliever there for a pen that looks a little shaky. Sure, I could see that. I don't think we might slightly overrate how much the Mets success or failure next year plays into that. Though again, if they're bad, they can always shut him down early too.
That was what I was thinking.
But I think there'll be at least, look, I mean, I can be shitty about, I'm not a fan of the offseason. I think they'll be competitive just because the NL East is so fucking bad. Barring some sort of Nationals renaissance.
I think you outlined a pretty solid plan there, even with just the hypothetical. Like,
so even if we're talking maybe they'll go to a 6-man at first. I could see them doing that for the first like month or so, and that allows you to keep Mats and Syndergaard's innings down a little bit too, which I think is something they'll at least monitor. I think DeGrom and Harvey, the kid gloves, will be off next year.
They should be.
They should be, and they should have been this year, but whatever. For what is a fairly conservative industry and a conservative team in that in regards to those kind of things. I could at least see the argument for doing it in 2015, but in 2016, there's no case for DeGrom and Harvey not throwing 200 innings in season. But he makes 12 starts, 15 starts, 5 to 6 innings each. I think he probably gets more than Familia in all likelihood.
I just think based on typical pitcher recovery. He'll come back later than expected, and therefore he'll make less. He'll throw less innings.
I think also if they're in good shape, there's an argument for doing that, for sort of ramping up his rehab. Like, I'd really like to, in a perfect world, I'd like to keep him out for 18 months. You know, maybe that would put him into September. Maybe you bring him back in August, and then maybe move him to the pen for a potential playoff thing. I don't want to rush him back.
No. Well, let's say the Mets are, in some miracle world, they're running away with the division. You let him take an extra month. You ramp him up. But then in the playoffs, you can, I don't know, piggyback him and Mats and turn two good starters into an awesome playoff fourth starter.
And you also have the platoon split there, too. So if somebody wants to start a tough righty against...
Exactly.
A lefty masher against Mats, you can bring in Wheeler in a big spot in the fourth or the fifth and negate that to a certain extent.
Right, and we can quibble all we want about the whole bullpen game, picking backing, not being effective thing, but that seems like a strategy that could work if the Nationals are as disappointing as they were last year.
Here's a more interesting question to me. Marcel projection for Jairus Familia next year, 72 innings, 2.88 ERA, slightly under a K per inning. So 70 strikeouts, 23 walks, and 72 innings. 2.88 ERA. Are you taking the over or the under there?
Over being better or...
Is he going to be better or worse than that?
I'll take the over, as in he'll be better than that.
He's been better the last two seasons.
Yeah.
And I think even building in a certain amount of balls in play regression... He might be
his
closer
stuff
to
is
like,
also different,
right? He might be closer to his 2014 than 2015. Though he wasn't particularly. He might have even been slightly unlucky on fly balls last year. Though he did some weird stuff. I think anyway, he slices to be a very good reliever.
I'm going to say slightly under.
Really, you think he'll be worse than that?
Just slightly. I just feel like that with regression and with the. Yeah, I'll say slightly worse.
See, relievers are weird because it's like you build in a certain amount of batting average on balls and play regression to all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think your elite relievers have low BABIPs. That's just that's why they're elite relievers, essentially.
Right.
But he was so fucking good at the end of the season.
He was. He was just very good. Yeah. Dude, you can make an argument. I'm not going to make this argument on the podcast that he has 380 grade pitches. Like, legitimately, you can make that argument. There's nobody that has that.
I think the splitter you could definitely say is 80 because it's freaking unhittable.
I mean, at worst, you're talking like 877. At worst. I mean, the command profile is not great, but it's 877. Who gives a shit?
For a reliever.
Right. And Steamer has him as a 3.12 ERA next year. Because they really don't buy into it. And it's not like it's a crazy low BABIP. His BABIP 2014 was 264. This year it was 272.
His ex-BABIP's really low, too.
Yeah. It's on the low end of a reasonable range for a major league quality pitcher. I mean, it's not like... I think who the crazy outlier was last year. I think it's like Dylan Betances has something ridiculous.
Dylan Betances is ridiculous in general.
Yeah, I mean, Betances' last 2 years, 241 and 257. Which is very low. You expect something, I mean, generally you expect something between 280 and 320. You want to look at BABIP as a range. But you expect elite pitchers to overperform that because they have elite stuff, especially in guys in short bursts like Betances and Betances. I've mentioned this in the show before. I think we had a familiar related question. Betances, 90 innings and 84 innings the last two seasons as a reliever, and a very, very good one. But if I just do a quick little pitching leader search, which I will do, hopefully relievers. I want 2014 to 2015, which is kind of arbitrary because it's the two seasons that Familia has been good. but for this purpose, I don't really care about that. So qualified between 2014 and 2015. The guys with the lowest batting average on balls in play. Why do you always sort highest first? Highest, by the way, Jim Johnson, probably to the surprise of no one.
Tyler Clippard's going to be towards the lowest.
He's fourth. He is not the highest Met on the list, though. Right? He did not have the lowest BABIP of any Met over the last two seasons, or pitcher that pitched for the Mets.
Huh.
There is one ahead of him at number three. The top two are Joaquin Benoit and K-Rod. But again, elite-level relievers.
Wade and Davis. You said that number three is...
Number three has pitched for the Mets.
Has Mets history, okay.
Yes. Huh. Like Clippard, but has a lower BABIP than Clippard.
Alex Torres?
No.
Josh Edgen?
No.
Huh.
Henry Mejia?
No. Mejia's actually been unlucky on balls in play, if I recall correctly.
Hansel Robles?
Hansel Robles, 227.
Wow. Someone give a cigar to Lucas.
Hmm. Dude also has a 1.33 home runs per nine in the majors. So as much as you complain about Tyler Clippard and his extreme fly ball rate.
Well, my problem with Clippard is more he doesn't strike anybody out. So Robles strikes out more and walks fewer.
That is correct. You know, Familia doesn't even make like the top. Betances is a 248. He's 18th. Elite relievers have good performance on balls in play. We're talking about guys like AJ Ramos, Pedro Strop, JJ
Hansel Robles,
elite relievers, Darren O'Day, Ryan Madsen's in there, Brad Ziegler, these are the top 20. Familia doesn't even make the first page on Fangraphs for relievers for the last 2 years.
A lot of it's just you get pop-ups or you get weak ground balls, or yep. You're Clayton Kershaw and you get both because...
How do we even get on this? Who's going to pitch more innings next year? If we should answer the email.
Familia.
I think it's Wheeler. I heard like Wheelmilia from the group. So
I said Familia. Brian said Familia.
I think we're losing Steve.
Again.
Oh, God damn.
We're just gonna keep going, it's okay. Our last email is from Sean. Hey Jeff and other, it's your guy on Long Island, Sean, with another sandwich update. I guess I gotta represent the BP brand and talk about sandwiches now.
Our hot dogs a sandwich
is something I do not care about. I do not care about this question at no point in time, even on a semiotic level, have I cared about this question. The Seaport Deli, home of the Steven Matt sandwich, also knows how to Jacob deGrom, which is chicken cutlet, roast beef, melted Munster, onion rings, lettuce, tomato, and a ranch chipotle dressing on a toasted garlic hero. Once again, if you find yourself in Setauket, New Jersey, New York, whatever, make a stop for this Mets loving institution. I know you're from Long Island, so you're annoyed and back on the podcast now. I think it's we'll talk about the sandwich briefly before we get to the rest of the email. It's a little too busy for me.
Agreed.
I don't know if it needs the roast beef.
I was just going to say the same thing. Roast beef or chicken cutlet. Pick one.
Yeah. I think the onion rings go better with the roast beef or the cutlet?
Roast beef.
Yeah, maybe just cut the cutlet. Roast beef and Munster is a good combination, too.
That's a great combination.
Yeah.
And the garlic hero does complicate things a little bit, though. I feel like chicken cutlet on a garlic hero is a really good combination.
But Munster and garlic is a good combination, too.
Hmm.
Garlic makes everything better.
But you can still have the Munster with the cutlet. I appreciate the effort here. It's just not quite coming together for me. Anyhow, I've been thinking about the Mets lineup situation. I want to know your thoughts as it relates to the original NES ice hockey game. I was a Blades of Steel guy, so I don't know how much help I'm going to be here.
So was I.
Yeah. We'll just pretend it's... Oh, yeah. So you know the one where you get to pick your starting lineup and make them skinny, fat, skinny and fast, medium, or strong and plump. I'm wondering because it seems with the moves we've made, the only real spot to upgrade is in center. This came in before the Daza thing, but for the purposes of this conversation, we just pretend like Daza is our fifth outfielder. Seeing as we don't have a classic leadoff guy per se, do you think there is value in expanding our skill set by getting a speedy on base guy versus a power bat type who doesn't play the outfield as well? We got a speedy on base guy who doesn't play the outfield as well, so I think that answered your question. Well, value is derived from all types of skill sets. Do you think there's an advantage in spreading out that value in a few different skill sets, i.e. is war just war? Or does lineup composition and varied skill sets help? I always thought making a team of all mediums made the most logical sense, but I gradually evolved to a fat, skinny combo dude with just one medium playing center. A lot of our guys seem like mediums, Grandy, Conforto, three-quarters of our outfield, etc. We've got boppers in Duda and Travis, but where's the speed guy? Does it matter? Having a balanced team would seem to put you at less competitive disadvantage based on matchups against any given team, but doesn't really matter. If we got the healthy 2014 version of Denard Span and got to drop Grandy down the order, isn't that just about the same as signing Suspedes, at least in terms of projected value? Thanks for the pod. Looking forward to another year of Greek death metal. So, Sabermetric Orthodox says lineup construction does not matter. But I think there is some sort of like, there is some value in, let's say, signing Denard Span, putting his on-base ability at the top of the order, and then having Granderson bat second with the on-base power combo behind him. So now maybe you pop the occasional two-run homer instead of solo shot. I can see a case for that. I think generally just get good players.
Yeah.
Get players that are better than Alejandro de Aza for your starting lineup.
I think there has been some pushback on the idea that lineup construction doesn't matter as much. And even in the book, there was a section on, well, with the players you have, how best to construct your lineup.
Sure. I mean, the problem is a lot of that, the sort of the long-term 162-game projections, a lot of them, the difference comes from like lineups where you're batting like your worst hitter third. And nobody does that.
Right.
I think there is value in clustering.
Yes.
If you have, like, if it's like a Stars and Scrubs type thing, you have five really good players and four really not so great offensive players. You put the five best hitters 1 through 5 and just try to score as many runs in those innings as possible. So there's something to that. But for the Mets, and specifically the 2016 Mets, I think even with a more aggressive offseason than what you've seen, there wasn't going to be that kind of lineup. It was still going to be a fairly, you know, 9 guys with a weighted runs created plus of like 110 to 130 kind of thing, or 100 to 130 more realistically. So then, yeah, there might be value going lefty-righty for sort of like leverage things late in games at that point. I guess as currently constructed, how would you roll out the Mets 2016 lineup?
Let's go. I think you leave Granderson in the leadoff spot.
Are we presuming this is with, again, against a lefty or a righty?
Do you have really strong, I think the Daza Lagares bats 8th in either configuration.
Okay.
So I don't think if it matters to you, you can specify within the, let's just say against righties. Are they going to move guys up and down? I mean, I guess maybe Darno bats above Duda and Conforto against lefties.
That was my primary concession, yeah.
Let's just say it's against righties and make it easy, because that's going to be 70-ish percent of the games anyway. Yeah. Y'all crunching numbers?
I'm making my lineup here.
Yeah, I'm typing it out so I don't miss anyone. I think I go, wait, nope, I lied.
Yes, I'll do this too. Scintillating way to end the year on the podcast.
Exactly, yeah.
People typing things.
Okay, we're saying against righties. Dump them.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, go ahead.
Your first one. Right. I do Granderson, Walker, Conforto, Duda, Wright, Darno, Cabrera, Deaza, the pitcher spot.
I had Granderson, Conforto to right, Duda, Darno, Walker, Cabrera, Deaza.
I have the exact same thing as Lucas.
I fucking love Conforto.
Conforto should bat second.
Yep.
Because he gives you that same... third. If the idea of moving Granderson down is you want the power OBP spike in the second spot, I think Conforto gets you there as well. Yep. I'm willing to move Darno up to third if Wright doesn't flip-flop them if it doesn't work at first. But
see, I figure, you know, the top of your order gets the most plate appearances for facing a righty. Let's put a lot of lefties at the top of the order.
Yeah, that's fine, too. There's an argument for that. I just like Walker's empty power against righties. And not empty power. That's not fair. He does take walks, too. But I like him a little bit further down in the lineup. I think we lost Steve again, or is he still there?
No, I'm still here.
All right, what's your lineup against righties?
I don't know.
All right, that's fine.
Grandy, Wright, Conforto, Duda, Darno, Walker, and I don't know what the rest of the lineup is.
Cabrera and Deaza, probably.
They don't really matter, though.
I have no idea what they're going to get out of Cabrera, but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. Those are your emails. Once again, you can email the podcast at podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. We will not be answering any of them until 2016, however, because that is a wrap, finally, on 2015. Hope you enjoyed our Festivus Festival of Fun. And we'll see you next year on Amazing Avenue Audio.
Merry Christmas to all.
Yes.
Happy Festivus, etc.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Whatever the politically correct holiday greeting is at this
I didn't
point.
Make the joke. I was going to make the joke about us celebrating Festivus, further contributing to the podcast's contributions to the decline of the West, and I didn't make it. I feel bad now. Which is as political as I get on the show, I'm pretty sure.
Poor Bob Costas.
It's Bill Kristol, not Bob Costas.
It's Christmas Mega Week, and EuroMillions from the National Lottery is creating 5 more guaranteed UK millionaires. We'll also win a private chalet experience. Make sure you've got your ticket for the Christmas Day event. Play makes it possible. Game-specific rules for non-cash prizes available at nationallottery.co.uk. Games rules and procedures apply. Players must be 16 or over.